This is Luke. This is a disclaimer. This episode ended up being recorded, and then I made a mistake. Somehow, during the editing process, I lost some of the data. I'm not actually sure what I did, and I'm sorry for that. We had recorded Derek, Ryan, and I, and then Ryan and I hopped on to re-record about 45 minutes that we had lost, and we ended up talking about the defense again, and this was a mistake again. We'll see if we can come together and record the offense later, but I just wanted to acknowledge this. If you want to skip it, I understand, but yeah, maybe laugh at my mistakes. I would appreciate it. Poke fun at me online. That's also fair. It wasn't great, but yeah, thanks again for always listening, and go Gophers. And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys to We Show Up Even When the Gopher Football Team Refuses To, as I allegedly watched a game at Kinnick Stadium where the Gopher football team showed up at about, I would say, 3:30. But unfortunately for them, the game started at 2:41 Central on CBS, as your Golden Gophers have one of the most horrific stretches in a 20-minute span that I may have seen in my adult life, losing in spectacular fashion in a 41-3 rout. They're down 31-0 after the first 20 minutes of the game, where Iowa hits for the cycle. Ryan, how do they hit for the cycle? You saw a passing touchdown from the Iowa offense. You saw a pick six, a punt return touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and a field goal. You score in five different ways and three different phases, and you get to hit for the cycle. Like, your name is Shohei Ohtani. Now, joining us to break down what was an abomination, at least in the first 20 minutes, which I think we'll focus today on pretty specifically, is my second cousin, DTA Zone, former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, was I hard enough on the Gopher football team in the open, or should we continue to go on them?
No, I think you've captured the essence of the first part of it. I've only seen, as a Minnesota sports fan, I've only ever seen one game start like that, and that was the Vikings 41-0 loss against the New York Giants, if you're old enough to remember that, in the playoff game, I guess early 2000s, roughly. That's the only one I've seen start like this. And like you said, basically after the first 20 minutes, it just didn't matter. But, you know, I do enjoy talking college football with you guys, win or loss. So I appreciate you having me back.
All right. Yeah. To your point, Ryan, this was a 41-3 loss for your Golden Gophers on the day. Iowa amasses 274 yards of total offense, 141 through the air, and 133 on the ground. Minnesota amasses 133 yards of total offense, 109 through the air, and 24 on the ground. I think it was a fairly cleanly played game. There were only five penalties, but somehow Iowa still managed to get two unnecessary roughness penalties, which was interesting given they're up 41-3. And one of the more perplexing unnecessary roughness penalties that I can't seem to get over. But we don't need to talk about that. I think it has to probably start. We'll probably start with the defense today because that's how the game started. If you watched the game or you listened to the game, Iowa took their scripted 9-play, 75-yard drive and found their way right down the field and got a touchdown quite easily. It was a shoestring tackle by Maverick Baranowski that kept the running back out of the end zone, and then a really neatly designed play that saw Mark Gronowski rush for 2 yards for a touchdown. And you probably had to ask yourself, there are three certainties in life. They are death, taxes, and Iowa scoring on their scripted drive, Derek.
Yeah, I think the summary from the first drive from Iowa was there was one play that was a straight ahead play and a stretch zone play, which Iowa likes to run. Every single other play was either a misdirection or a play action pass. So very clear, Iowa showed their cards early. They felt like you know, Minnesota playing man defense was their preference. We're going to come out, run misdirection, run fake handoffs, play action, because we think Minnesota, that's going to get Minnesota off their spot and out of their gap. And they happen to be right. I mean, it was Minnesota was I knew it was going to be a difficult day when I think it was the first or second, I guess, read option or fake handoff. And you had literally two Minnesota defenders completely bite, chasing down the Iowa ball carrier who actually didn't have the ball. Mark Gronowski kept it. It was going to be that type of day. So that was Iowa's approach on offense, on the, specifically on the scripted drive, was going to be to start with heavy, heavy misdirection and get Minnesota out of their gap.
I felt like I was watching a Joe Rossi defense in Kinnick Stadium, and that's not going to be meant as a compliment, because I think about the amount of times that Brian Ferentz had the number of Joe Rossi in those first 20 minutes of games, where I think in the 2019 one specifically, didn't the Gophers get down 20-0?
Oh, it might. I can yep. look that up, but it was big, yeah.
And that's
that was an Iowa team that hadn't passed all year, and then they came out and just threw the ball up and down the field.
And that's where Iowa tried to pass, but Mark Gronowski still is largely incapable of completing downfield throws. He missed a wide-open guy in the end zone. It didn't matter because Iowa ended up scoring a touchdown later. But in the first quarter, Iowa scores 17 points. I mean, it's just the defense rebounded in the final 40 minutes, and that's great. If you want to find a Silver Linings podcast, I don't think this one is going to be the one for you today, because – that's great that maybe they have some semblance of momentum going into next week, but you allowed 17 points and you allowed 6.4 yards per play. I wrote about after the game, to Derek's point, it was misdirection and missed tackles, and largely Minnesota didn't miss a ton of tackles. I think PFF had them in single digits on Saturday afternoon, which is great. I would just tell you, I don't know that they missed a tackle in the second half. I can tell you where they missed the tackles in the first quarter, and that was when the game was still a game. So I look at some of the PFF stuff as well, and the PFF grades I do not agree with, especially for linemen most times. But we talked about in the preview with Luke that Iowa's offensive line had been outstanding. They've been one of the best that Minnesota will face all year. Well, you look at how did they grade out, according to Pro Football Focus? Five of the top six players on Iowa's offense were their offensive line. Four of the five lowest graded Gophers on the defensive side were Anthony Smith, Devin Eastern, and Jalen Logan Redding, plus Rushon Lawrence. So when on the flip side, four of your five defensive linemen are the lowest graded, that's how things are going to get pear-shaped very, very quickly. And just only, I think the Gophers only amassed six pressures on the night, which is a season low. I mean, they got, I said this on Gopher Football Sunday, Derek, the Gopher defensive line got knocked back so far, their glasses turned into contacts. And they couldn't get off a block. The misdirection from Tim Lester really threw Minnesota for a loop. I didn't think that John Nestor and his return to Iowa City necessarily had a great night. It's unfortunate that he is the one that Reese Vanderzee catches the touchdown on. He also misses a tackle in space. I will note that John Nestor did not end the game healthy. He came in after missing one game, wanted to play. I get it. It's his return to Iowa City. Did not finish the game. I watched him hobble to the locker room afterwards, so I think his status for Michigan State next weekend is certainly within doubt, but not enough physicality from a Gopher defensive line in the first 20 minutes of the game.
Yeah, and I think that we've talked about in previous games lack of playing fast on defense. I actually didn't think that was an issue for the most part in this game. I thought the Gopher, they looked like they had some juice. They wanted to play fast. In fact, maybe at some point with the misdirections, they were jumping their reads a little bit early, and that's what Iowa was taking advantage of. But I do want to underscore one thing you said, which was the Iowa offensive line was as advertised. I mean, their blocking specifically at the point of attack was elite. So what that means as a defense is from your front seven, your pursuit defenders have to make the tackle. Your first pursuit defender to the ball has to make the tackle. So the if you want to call them chunk plays that Iowa ripped off in the running game were all because point of attack was blocked. The pursuit, which is usually the backside linebacker, and sometimes it's a safety, is your first pursuit defender to the ball. If that tackle was broken, it was going to be 10-plus yard rushing game. So Iowa was, as you've pointed out before, and the game even, Ryan, they're putting up points. They're pretty dynamic with their run game. I wouldn't say they have an elite running back, but it's their blocking. I mean, they're able to, and then you mix in Mark Gronowski's ability to run the ball incredibly effectively and do well with his fakes and his boots and things like that. And so that's the challenge they presented. And again, I don't think that Minnesota wasn't, I don't think Minnesota was playing slow, but it was, they're not going to win at the point of attack because Iowa's offensive line is elite. And then when you have your pursuit defenders either not getting there quickly enough or out of their gap because it's a misdirection, that's where you end up with your 8-plus yard gains, which was early and often, unfortunately.
Yeah, and watching that first drive and going with misdirection, it was really wise because, at least from my standpoint, I'm thinking, okay, they run a ton of misdirection. Pardon me. Holy cow. I'm not showing up like the Gophers aren't showing up with my voice, but I digress. But using misdirection, that really gets you thinking, right? Especially as a defense. And Derek, to your point, if you're thinking, you're usually not playing fast. And especially when you can own the point of attack, now you've got that back seven having to think about that misdirection or remembering that misdirection. And I think that did play an effect because ultimately Iowa just kind of had their way early, right? Obviously, maybe they pulled back on the throttle or put the governor in place. But, you know, on the day that the Gopher defense in a 41-point loss only gave up 27 points, it's not a silver lining per se, but it's not like this was Iowa's, you know, to your earlier cycle comment, Ryan, this wasn't Iowa's offense absolutely dominating the whole way. This was all three phases that Iowa was dominant.
And it's an Iowa offense that while they struggle to complete a forward pass, they are one of the best rushing offenses. So that was to be expected. I just think this continues a trend for the Gopher defense on the road. Minnesota, 100%. And you're going to hear us say this a lot today, has been outscored in three road games, 110-20. I mean, that's substantial. And Luke said, and he's right, I mean, it's only 27 points allowed by the defense, but you allowed 17 in the first three drives to Iowa. And that's a very big problem. But the bigger problem is the tackles for loss are great, and you can't take away nine tackles for loss. I just don't believe they tell the story.
No.
And the story to me is in three road games, the Gopher defense has yet to force a takeaway.
Yeah.
How are you being outscored 110-20? Well, part of it is you can't force takeaways, and they just continue to be such a Jekyll and Hyde defense in that regard where they either get zero or they get three. And I understand that takeaways are a little fluky and nuanced in nature, but they're also not. Like, Derek, what do you make of the whole zero takeaways in 12 quarters away from Huntington Bank Stadium?
Well, in this season, I put a lot of it on the fact that they're playing man coverage. It doesn't explain the previous season, which was also an issue with takeaways. But in essence, when you're playing man coverage, your defense is not, your secondary is not going to get interceptions at the same clip as zone. So unless really the only way you're going to end up with interceptions in man coverage is if you're pulling away a contested catch. I mean, you can step in front of one. Obviously, the opposing quarterback can make a big mistake. I mean, that's anything's possible. But in general, playing as much man coverage as they've been playing, and I think will continue, I don't think the outlooks are good that's going to turn around. Now, fumbling and things like that, again, it's, I think part of it is fluky. But also, if you're not running a lot of zone blitzes, run blitzes, things like that, probably also not going to help you out in terms of giving you an advantage. And so it just makes that uphill climb more difficult. When you mentioned the starting field position, you mentioned the takeaways, all those things add up to, even if you're playing well, it's just it's a taller mountain to climb. You get no shortcuts, you get no breaks, and it just makes it harder for the offense ultimately to score.
Yeah, and just to wrap up, you know, I've felt like, okay, defensively, the Gophers, or I shouldn't say the Gopher defense only, but the Gophers have really struggled and given up a lot of points. The irony is this is the first game that they've really given up points early, right? Against Cal, and this isn't on road games in specific, but against Cal, they were able to force two punts, in the first quarter, for instance, out of Cal. And then against Ohio State, you're able to get the missed field goal, and then Ohio State doesn't score until the very end of the first quarter. But here, it was just an onslaught from the beginning. Again, back to that death taxes and Iowa scores on their scripted drive. It's just a tough go of it for the defense. Any other things you guys want to touch on defense before we move on to offense?
Let's keep them moving today.
All right, let's catch a quick break then while we have this, and then we will talk about when the Gophers were on offense. Ryan, I don't know if you've noticed, but energy prices seem to be going up. We probably use about the same amount of electricity, but we're happening to actually be spending more. If you are a farmer, a grower, maybe a commercial business, or you have commercial property, working with Blue Horizon Energy could actually help you hedge off these costs, Ryan. You can invest now to be able to actually save yourself money in the future, because you'll probably be using about the same amount of electricity. You'll just be paying more.
I think that sounds like a great idea to me. Again, supporting those who support us is such an important thing, or even they'd support the University of Minnesota. They got the solar panels on top of the brand new gymnastics facility. So they're doing their part to support your favorite football team. If you're listening to us, I'm going to imagine we're one of your favorite podcasts. So where should people go if they want to learn more about Blue Horizon Energy, Luke?
Again, go to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. There's a form that you can fill out there. They'll get in touch with you and talk about opportunities for you. Again, bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. All right, Ryan, I have a new venture that I started. It's called eVenture. It's eVentureshure.com. And this is a place where you can donate your tickets as a season ticket holder. And guess what? We partnered with Dinkytown Athletes, and we will probably partner with other collectives, but you can donate your season tickets that you aren't able to use, because I don't know if you know, but I have a hectic schedule and I can't always use my tickets. And so I've had people donate tickets here, and I have tickets here for the Michigan State game. They are in the outdoor club. And if you're interested in that, a portion of the proceeds is going to go to Dinkytown Athletes to be able to support them. So Ryan, if you know anyone, I have three tickets with parking for Michigan State. A very loyal listener to the podcast and friend of the pod donated them, and we're really excited to start this venture. We've got a number of different tickets available at very subsidized prices.
Well, it sounds like an outstanding idea to get away from the StubHubs of the world and also support the lovely, lovely and handsome folks at Dinkytown Athletes. So how do people go procure these tickets, Mr. Buehr?
They go to eVenture.com, eVentureshure.com. There you'll be able to buy those, and they'll get transferred to you in short order. So if you have tickets you want to donate, or you want to find a way to get into the game in great seats at a reasonable price with no hidden fees, come check us out. Ryan, I always enjoy when we get a chance to interact with our listeners, and I heard recently after one of the events on Oak Street for you, you ran into Austin, who you've talked about for the Burns Insurance Agency before. Yeah. And goodness gracious, that man has a story, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, he appreciated being on the podcast here as a loyal listener, and he appreciates everything we do, and we appreciate him for supporting those who support us. And I told the story here that my father at the Burns Insurance Agency saved him $700. Compared to what he was previously paying. Well, he came up to me on Oak Street. And he said, "Hey, Ryan, want you to know I just talked to him. He's going to be saving me, get ready for this, $1,000 this year with switching over to a different insurance company within the Burge Insurance Agency." And that's the beauty of being an independent insurance agent, is every single year, the Burns Insurance Agency looks for the best rates and the best coverage for you, because all they want to do is give you the best service possible. Austin saved $1,000 just this past week. So if you are a Gopher fan in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, New York, Florida, or Utah, and you're looking to support those who support us, Check them out today at insurancebyburns.com or email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
And welcome back to the defensive part that is being recorded for a second time. So, you know, Ryan, you said that the Gophers didn't show up. Well, guess what? Neither did I, because we recorded this. Derek won't be joining us because, well, quite frankly, we already recorded and got his thoughts. But we're going to record here now to make up for my catastrophic blunder, a la the first quarter for the Golden Gophers. So just a reminder to where we were at, the Gophers lost this game 41-3. In this game, Ryan, the Gopher defense gave up only 27 points, only 27, like that was some sort of feat. It was not. But they were very much not the sole reason that this game was lost.
No, I mean, they're as much at fault for some of it, considering you look at, like, we're going to spend most of this episode talking about the first 20 minutes. You get down 31-0. That's the only thing that I think you need to focus on. What happens in the remaining 40 minutes is what it is. But the Gopher defense allows 17 points on Iowa's first three offensive possessions. And that's the crux of this thing, is they can play well, and they did largely after that. But by then, it just doesn't matter. So why is it that way? And I know one of the things that we heard Derek talk about, and I wrote about it after the game too, was misdirection and missed tackles, where you watch those first three offensive drives for Tim Lester's offense. You saw a middle screen to Caden Wiechen. You saw a lot of misdirection trying to get Gopher linebackers and secondary members going one way, and then they would come back another with another way. I mean, that stands out to me on my rewatch, Luke, is they were ready to throw the Gophers a curveball, where you think about Iowa's offensive line. I mean, they're really good and they performed really well, but the amount of gaping holes they had to go through, these tailbacks or even Mark Gronowski on the first three drives of the game, it was pretty upsetting for me to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, like, to your point, and Derek had brought up in the recording that we had, the misdirection was clearly the way they were going to go. And the reality that they also knew that they had is they had an incredible offensive line that they could lean on going forward. And they were able to do just that by getting the misdirection on that first drive. Iowa was then able to get Minnesota thinking. Ryan, you'll remember that Derek explained to us that he thought the Gopher defense actually played pretty fast, but the reality is that offensive line was also incredibly good. And the other reality is when you're down 17-0 and one of those first touchdowns is a special teams touchdown, it's frustrating. And then, you know, then you give up another touchdown yourself, all of a sudden you're down 24-0. The game script just gets negative to begin with. And you have to give Iowa credit. Like, they were able to come in, and I said, you know, previously that, again, death taxes and Iowa scores on their scripted drive. It's just the way it goes, and that's attributed to their good coaching.
Yeah, I don't know that I disagree with too much there. I keep going back to that Iowa's not a bad offense. They're a horrific passing offense like they have been, but because their offensive line is so good, plus Mark Gronowski is just a winner. Like, he knows how to make winning plays, and he knows how to extend plays. I mean, I think about that first drive specifically. You finally get it to 3rd and 11. You send a three-man pressure and drop 8, and Gronowski still somehow finds the soft spot in the zone right at the marker. I didn't have any problem with that spot there. I know maybe some people did. Looked like a first down to me. But then on the next play, that probably should have been a touchdown if Maverick Baranowski doesn't run 15 yards down the field. Just there was no knockback from this Gopher defensive line. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been the story of the season for them on the road, is the Gophers have been outscored 110-20 on the road. The defense may have only given up 27 in this one, but it was the 17 points on the first three offensive possessions. Why? Iowa's offensive line did what they were supposed to, and Minnesota's defensive line of Anthony Smith, Rushon Lawrence, Jalen Logan Redding, and Devin Eastern were 4 of the 5 lowest graded players via Pro Football Focus. And from rewatching this game, I would agree with that. There were not enough opportunities for the Gopher linebackers to shed blocks or even the secondary that kept being put in conflict to make tackles in space. And I'll give them credit for this. I mean, we were pounding the table, Luke, for Coy Parrish to have his best tackling game of the season. I think he took some poor angles early, but largely I think him and Kerry Brown tackled well.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is the rest of the team, or even on Gronowski's RPO touchdown, Joey Gerlach and Anthony Smith are both out of position on the only guy that you know is going to take the ball on an RPO. Again, he came into this game, Mark Gronowski, the Iowa quarterback, with 10 rushing touchdowns. So, of course, on first or whatever in goal it was, he's going to take the ball and they're out of position. And then John Nestor gets beat in his return to Iowa City on Reese Vandersee. Just too many things early in the game where it reminded me of almost the 2019 game, I believe it was, where Joe Rossi against Brian Ferentz, it was like, I think it was a 20-0 hole where Iowa just, they were more prepared, ready to go in Kinnick, and they played like it. And before I get to any more thoughts there, do you got any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, generally speaking, you're right. It, like, Iowa isn't great at the forward pass. I think that's true, but it doesn't mean that they can't be a competent and good offense, which they have been. And Gronowski, to your point, being a gamer is absolutely true. The other thing is, like, you have to give credit to just some of the play construction. Like, you talked about the first touchdown, that they had where Gronowski ran that one in, right?
Yep.
That was just a clever play design, and it got the Gophers out of their fit. And ultimately, yes, they should be focusing on Gronowski, but with all the motion and whatnot, they got out of sorts, and they were able to, you know, basically fool the Gophers and score that touchdown. It was a great play design. And then ultimately, to me, like, they did just enough in the pass game to keep the Gophers off kilter. You know, Mark Gronowski was 12 of 19 for 135 yards. Not anything fantastic. But, you know, he hit just enough throws. And to be honest, on the one that Nestor got beat on, I don't know if Nestor could have played that ball any better, right?
You like, turn your head and look for it, which,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, like, he was there. It was just, it ended up being a great throw, and he deserves credit. And the guy made a tough catch, right? If Nestor turns, you know, maybe he picks that ball off. Alternatively, Nestor had another one where the ball does not tip. He probably picks that ball off.
He missed one in space that allowed Weechen to go along the sidelines,
which
sets up the field goal. Or Zaquan Bryant gets beat on that first drive, which should have been a walk-in touchdown.
Yes.
But Gronowski is errant when he makes down the field throws. So it's give and take with this whole thing. And that's where here's where I'm at with this defense right now. Is you look at the stats, and I just don't believe they tell the story of what this game was, where Minnesota had 9 tackles for loss. You're thinking to yourself, boy, they must have. If you didn't watch a single second of this game, what a lovely world you must be living in, first of all.
But that's what the game script, when it's negative, is to your advantage too, right? As a defense. So,
but that's also kind of my point with this whole thing. 9 tackles for loss. You would think, boy, they had a lot of explosive plays. No. No, sir, they did not, which continues the theme for the Gopher defense on the road. The Gopher defense in 12 quarters away from Huntington Bank Stadium has yet to force a defensive takeaway. That is a massive problem. If you that was the thing we had talked about coming into this game, is the Gophers win this game if they're +2. They have to win the turnover margin. You had to at least turn over Mark Gronowski or whoever it may be. And the Gopher defense just refuses to do that on the road. I don't know what defense to expect to show up, where they settled in after the first 40 minutes, but by then it's 31-0. It doesn't matter in that regard. You allowed 17 points to Iowa on their first 3 offensive possessions. So they can adjust and play well. I would also say, I don't know that the Gopher defense necessarily played well in the final 40 minutes, Luke. I almost think Iowa just called off the dogs said we're going to run 4 different plays because we're all trying to sim to the end of this game at that point. But I just need to see the Gopher defense start faster. That had been the thing we talked about in the preview, is PJ Fleck had never led first against Iowa. And none of the eight previous matchups. So Iowa wins the toss. They take the ball, saying, we're very confident we're going to score, and they should have been. They should have almost scored twice before Gronowski walked it in. Does Tim Lester deserve credit? Yes. Does the Iowa offensive line live up to the billing? Certainly. I just think that this Gopher defense, specifically on the defensive line, I mean, their defensive tackles got pushed around all day. Anthony Smith had his lowest graded game of the entire season. If you are not going to win in the trenches against Iowa in Kinnick, as you often text me in my morning text to you every day, may the Lord bless you and keep you, because he is not going to shine down upon you if you're going to get punched in the mouth and not respond.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, at the end of the day, too, you know, some of the things that the Gophers have done make it problematic, mostly playing man coverage, right? You know, you can, especially with a running quarterback, that can be problematic. We saw that early, especially as Gronowski took off and ran. At the end of the day, there's a lot of young guys playing on this defense, and it's just been it's been a struggle of being able to be consistent, and they've been at their worst on the road, and this was again on the road, and the timing wasn't great, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, getting down early too, like, just didn't help. And the defense was a part of that, the special teams was a part of that, and the offense was a part of that, you know, early. So it was all three phases. It wasn't explicitly the defense. There's still opportunities ahead of them. It's just disappointing that they didn't show up.
Yeah, there's so many buckets from a game like this where it's offense, defense, special teams, coaching. And honestly, of the four buckets there, I'd put the least amount on the defense, probably. I think the offense was a bigger issue. I think my favorite special teams continues to be an unmitigated disaster. And then ultimately, the biggest bucket I have it in is coaching. You had an extra day to prepare for Iowa, and you came out and looked like you had never played football a day in your life. And this continues the theme of the Gophers looking horrendous on the road. And why is it that when you travel, you forget how to play football? I don't know how that happens, but it's now happening. Again, the Ohio State game, if you want to take it out and say, Ryan, they're the best team in college football, what do you expect? I don't disagree with you, but this continues the trend of wherever they go, they just struggle to play consistent football away from Dinky Town.
Well, the irony of that Ohio State game is they actually started really well.
That's the only game essentially all year
they
have started well.
Yeah. And that ended up pear-shaped as well, in large part, you know, due to Julian Sain being incredible.
Heisman contender.
Yeah, like he was absolutely incredible.
Well, it helps when he's got Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate. One's a first-round draft pick this year. The next one's a first-round draft pick next year. So that's where, with this one, Danny Collins has got to get them firing better against Iowa. You can't give up two touchdowns and a field goal in the first three drives. And I know it sounds like I'm being harsh, but after a game like this, how do you talk about a 38-point loss where you're down 31-0 and everybody's shell-shocked in any other light?
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit of special teams, because we have to. In the previous recording, I wasn't going to let you talk about special teams. Now I have to let you talk about special teams. Not a great day for your punter, and this goes back to the Nebraska game. We probably glossed over it the last time. Tom Weston was not good against Nebraska either. He continued that trend. He had the one that everyone assumed was blocked or tipped, but ultimately was kicked clean, just a complete shank that ended up into the stands. And then, you know, not able to pin one inside the 20, had a touchback as well. Not a good punting day. So we'll start there. Brady Denneberg, I think, was fine in this game. You can argue about the aggregate of the season. He's not been particularly good. Kick returns, Coy on kick returns, nothing remarkable. In large part, I think, I don't know. Kick return's always been a challenge. He's better. He seems to be better in punt return. But there's something scheme-wise. And I think where we ended up getting in the previous recording that we had here is the consistent thing, Ryan, is that PJ Fleck has been the consistent person there as special teams has been a challenge. This goes beyond two coordinators now. And you have to wonder if it's some philosophy, but it, some of it's also execution.
If we're going to stick specifically to Tom Weston, let me tell you about his first half, where he has five punts, and none of them net averaged over none of them had a net punt. So net yards would be if there is a 40-yard punt and a 5-yard return, that's a 35-yard punt. None of them had net yards over 35, and none of them were down inside the 20. I cannot express to you how what verbiage do I want to use here? Horrific that is. As Luke said, either you have the low liner to start, which I can assure you Fleck and special teams coordinator Bob Ligashevsky are well aware that Caden Wheatgen is really, really, really good. Arguably the best return man they're going to play all year. So for Weston to go to his left and get a low liner at 48 yards, yeah, that's not a great job by the punter there.
Yeah, the low liner. And he got, you know, Weston ended up getting pancake blocked on that play. I mean, just kind of an epitome of what it was of a punting day for him.
You've also got, as you said, the one where I thought it was tipped. Turns out it wasn't. I've never seen a ball hit a football player's foot at Kinnick Stadium and end up 15 rows up into Kinnick. That was a new experience for me, my best every day with a Necton mentality there, Luke.
In fairness to him, the stands are very close in Kinnick. So it's you know, maybe in a regular stadium, it would have been in like the third row. But yes, that was not
a 13-yard punt to put his defense in a tough spot. And then the one heard around the world of, I don't know that I've ever seen a 36-yard punt return for a touchdown before Caden Wheatgen did that. He had players all around him. He was fearless. The coverage team was not any good. And I mean, we're talking about Caden Wheatgen had 80 punt return yards on the day. That is almost four times as many rushing yards as the Gophers had.
Yeah.
It's just, this is what I will say because I'm tired of doing it every year, and you mention it. We've seen the special teams problem span multiple special teams coordinators from Rob Wanger to Bob Ligashevsky. We've seen the punting game not improve from Mark Crawford to now Tom Weston. We've seen the kicking game continue to struggle largely as an aggregate where the kicker is now one is again, there was no 40-yard attempt in this game, but Minnesota has only made one field goal over 40 yards and we're 2/3 of the way through the season. And then you have a return game that is anything but special who just continues to largely get nothing from. So what about special teams is special? And what is the underlying thing within that? There's been a lot of change with players. There's been a lot of change with special teams coordinators. I think at this point it just comes down to Fleck. I don't know how special teams continues to do this year after year because you are changing so much within it. But I think that's got to be something for Fleck in the offseason where your kicking game is maddeningly inconsistent. Your punting game continues to be a liability. Your return game continues to do absolutely nothing. What about special teams is special? And my bar to clear, as you listeners know, is are you a net positive for the team? And once again, in this game, you're outclassed by what may be the best special teams coordinator in America in LeVar Woods, and he deserves credit. So does Caden Wheatgen. But punting the ball to freaking Caden Wheatgen, Tom Weston, brother, what are you doing?
All right. One of the questions that we discussed and we should hear as well is, you know, why for the Gophers is it seem like they struggle so much on the road versus at home, right? They're currently what, 5-0 at home and they're 3-0 on the road, or 0-3 on the road, I'm sorry. So my answer here for this, and the only plausible thing I can point to, is they're young in two facets, Ryan. They're young like in terms of experience for a number of players, and those players, you know, span like your starting quarterback being a redshirt freshman. You've got a redshirt freshman wide receiver. You've got a redshirt freshman left tackle. We can go on offense. Then on defense, you've got Carter Menz playing a ton of reps. You've got Zaquan Bryan. You've got Kerry Brown and Coy Parrish are both, I think they're both sophomores. One's a redshirt sophomore. I could probably go on with even more guys pretty young there as well. But I think even more so, I'm starting to wonder if this is something to do with, just maybe young leadership or maybe even immature leadership. I can't point to that specifically. I don't have a good anecdotal example. But you, to me, I just wonder if they're young there as well. And when you think about the guys that, you know, are the faces of your team, it's Darius Taylor, it's Coy Parrish, it's Drake Lindsey, you know, two of those three guys are underclassmen. And just with the fact that it hasn't traveled well on the road, just wonder if there's some sort of maybe lack of maturity. That's all speculative on my part.
I don't know. I'm open to ideas and suggestions, and that's the thing about the 5-0 at home. And I would say, you know, I said previously that they've played really well at home. I don't think they have played really well at home. They've played well.
They've played well relatively.
Yeah. And they've recovered well in the second half of games, which is why in those three Big Ten wins, they're outscoring their opponents by 38 points in the second half. But on the road, you've been outscored 110-20. And that's a 90-point gap. And you can make excuses, or as Fleck would say, that they're not excuses, the reasons. Not excuses, but reasons. Where you fell apart against Cal after midnight local time, sure. Ohio State is a juggernaut, arguably the favorite to win the college football playoff, sure. But there's no excuse for what happened on Saturday afternoon and not being prepared. You had an extra day, and you didn't travel yet again. If you want to view each one as their own specific entity, sure. But this continues the trend of why. And you mentioned the leadership part of it. I know I'm closer to this team than 99.9% of people. I don't know what the answer is. And if you want to, I'll open it up to you guys, the listeners, if you want to leave your thoughts on why this team just cannot travel well for whatever the reason is, because I think this is the most hot and cold, I mean, bipolar team that I think I've probably covered in 15 years in this regard, that they know that when they get to sleep at the Graduate or wherever they sleep, I forget where their local hotel is here for game days, like they know how to come out and play. But when they have to go to a different city, they just forget. So if you have thoughts and feelings, go for illustrated.com, or you can leave them in the Spotify comments. We'll get to those too. But that's the thing, Luke, is you still have in the remaining four games, you've got a road game, and something I think we should determine right now. Is the Wrigley Field game technically a neutral field? Because Evanston, Illinois, this is not on the campus at Northwestern.
It's fair. Yeah, down in Wrigleyville.
This is in the house that Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor, your Sammy favorite Sosa. Second baseman, Nico Horner. I know you're a big Anthony Rizzo guy. Should I continue to go down the list here of Cubs?
No, it's technically
okay. A neutral site game.
Yeah, I guess by all technicalities, maybe that's what they should go with for the Gophers in that one, since, you know, traveling on the road has been a house of horrors.
They have to get it figured out. Eugene is what it is after the bye week. I want to see Minnesota play well there, just like Wisconsin stood up finally and decided they had a backbone and played Oregon well.
Yeah, put some points
there
on the board, yeah.
So that's the type of performance, is especially with the Oregon game. You have a week to prepare for them. Mm-hmm. Because after this Michigan State game, you get the bye week, and then you get to travel and all types of that. You're probably not going to beat Oregon, but that's why you play the games. It's the Northwestern one where that one is going to be a meat grinder. It always is. Minnesota, mm-hmm. Northwestern, especially the way that Northwestern wants to get you into a corner this year. That is a game where Minnesota is very liable to go 0-4 in their four remaining games if they play as poorly as they did the other night. They're also liable to go 3-1 because I think they'll be favored, and they are favored against Michigan State this upcoming weekend. They'll be favored against Wisconsin. I don't know what the Northwestern line will look like.
I think it'd be like a pick 'em with Northwestern probably.
And that's where, I mean, there's still a path to 8 wins. And I still don't know. I mean, this is where I've had a lot of fans broach the subject with me, Luke. Is say Minnesota does finish 7-5 or say even 8-4. I would say that would, like, it's every season is a journey emotionally. And I feel for every fan because it feels like this year specifically, and we even dealt with it last year.
Yeah.
Just the ups and downs and the roller coaster nature of how this thing is. feels like it's getting wider and wider every year. And I don't know that this team is anywhere near as talented as they were last year, but if they still somehow find a way to the same win total, it is what, I mean, you can't argue with the results to an extent there. It's just such a odd team to cover in Northwestern. Excuse me, not Northwestern, is just around the corner. November is just around the corner. So there, we still have so much, I feel like, to learn, but there's only so many games left.
Yeah, for sure. I think at the end of the day, you know, as frustrating as this loss is, you still got a lot in front of you that you can capitalize on. And for this Gopher team, I think you're right. Like, I think that last year's Gopher team probably underachieved. I would argue at this point, maybe this one is maybe even overachieving and has the opportunity to really overachieve if they're able to find a way to like 8 wins, you know, get to a bowl game. I think that's realistically on the table. But as you said, they conceivably could lose all of these as well. It's just really going to matter who shows up. And thankfully, most of these games are at home.
Yeah, you still got two more, including what should be a beautiful day this upcoming Saturday when Michigan State comes to town, a team that's not playing well. Lost 5 in a row, including an emotional one on Saturday to their biggest rival in Michigan State, or excuse me, Michigan, the Wolverines there. This team, man, just so high, so low, so in between. You go from playing your most physical game of the season to getting punched in the mouth. It's college football nowadays, I suppose.
Yeah, I've brought up a lot that this is a pretty young team. Like, how do you take that? Do you look at this as an opportunity getting a lot of young guys experience and then going into the next years? Like, yeah, you're going to have to fill some voids. You're going to lose an Anthony Smith likely to the NFL. And, you know, there's a lot of defensive line guys gone. But in the same respect, like, you've got a fair number of really young playmakers that are getting opportunities and, you know, building for the future.
You do have a lot of things to be optimistic about in 2026. If you can get Drake Lindsey still remains to me, even after his worst game of the season and probably of his athletic career, remains a very, very promising building block for me. And as long as Drake is here, I mean, I think you have the opportunity to have some fun with guys like Javon Tracy coming back, Jalen Smith another year. We continue to see Malachi Coleman play more and more snaps. It just comes down to how does Minnesota rebuild in the trenches? I mean, that's the biggest story from the Iowa game is your offensive line got punched, didn't get really back up. The defensive line, they're moved against their will in the first 20 minutes of the game. And if you aren't good in the trenches in the Big Ten, it's so tough to win games consistently, which I think that is the thing that maybe I draw back to is the offensive and defensive lines just are not traveling. I mean, they're physically there, but the mentality and the physicality is not. And that's got to be something that changes.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe last thing we should mention, because we lost Derek and he had some prescriptions of things that maybe the Gophers could do that could help them. Both offensively and defensively. I'm going to do the best I can to remember these. You need to help me out here. One was he suggested maybe that the Gophers could actually look to incorporate more of a screen game. We've seen them find success both in the tunnel and bubble screens, but this offensive line moves well. Go ahead. Yeah.
Speaking of, Minnesota threw one of those to Lemecki Brockington, and I have it in the GIF rewind. I don't know how he didn't score. He somehow found a path to finding a tackler. Three offensive linemen looking down the field, and there's a perfect all 22 of it.
Oh, nice.
That should have been a walk-in touchdown.
Yeah.
And they found a way not to
just... And that was on the blitz, too, right?
It was for the Gopher offense, though.
Yeah. And that's sometimes the way the cookie crumbles. So one would be incorporate the screen game. The other one, we talked a little bit about how... or Derek brought up that this maybe wouldn't be popular and likely not to happen given PJ Fleck infatuation of, you know, kind of identifying a running back and going with them throughout the game. But again, his idea was maybe some sort of running back by committee, give running backs the opportunity. I don't know if we talked about this pre-break, but, you know, currently with the state of Darius Taylor, he's not been particularly healthy. you know, you spend a lot of time, you know, in game weeks and whatnot preparing for him to be a focal point of the offense. And then when he's injured, you lose that. Maybe you need to make a broader focus, not focus on his skill set. This was largely some of Derek's talking points that we lost through this recording, thanks to me. But yeah, how would you sprinkle into this, you know, a running back by committee, something PJ likely wouldn't go for, but maybe something that this team could benefit from?
As far as the rest of the season goes, I'm open to any and all suggestions with personnel, offensive line-wise, running back-wise. We talked about it. I don't think Femme had a great day. I don't think Cam Davis had a great day. They had three drops between the three of them, and the running back is a big part of a Greg Harbaugh passing offense as the check down. You have to catch the ones that they throw you. We talk about that defensively. That's even with the running backs. You got to be able to catch the easy ones to continue to have the offense move forward. So if Darius is out for the rest of the regular season, and we don't know that because the head coach refuses to give updates, I would absolutely ride the hot hand of whether it's Femi Ijeboy one day, whether it's Cam Davis, if he gets going, or we even got to see a little bit of Xavier Ford and Grant Washington in this game. As I'll remind folks, Darius had played in 13 straight games, yet the Gopher football staff made the decision to bring in Cam Davis from Washington. But the guy who was supposed to see the benefit and was their bigger money item was AJ Turner. He had been very explosive at Marshall. There's a lot of hope and dreams there. And then in the non-conference, he goes down with a non-contact knee injury and he's out for the year. So whether it's the angry running back, deity, overlord, however you would like me to say it, it's another odd year, and that means the running back room has to be what it is. So the hope would be next year, you're a little bit more healthy there, but it just comes back to the discussion of what I think we'll be spending a lot of time on in December, January, February. What do you do with just big picture for 26 with the 26 running back room? I mean, do you build around Darius Taylor? What do you do with Darius Taylor? Because he's only, if he is out the remainder of the regular season, which I don't know if he is or not, but if it is a re-injury, it's just, I don't know what you do. And I don't have to be PJ Fleck in that regard of what you elect to do in terms of bringing in more guys from the portal, because Femi does return. AJ Turner would be back off his non-contact injury. You've still got, again, guys like Ryan Estrada coming in who are just continuing to put up gaudy numbers in 5A Texas football. I don't know what you do, but it's an outstanding thought exercise to try and figure out how does Fleck view this thing going into 26.
All right. I know that we've recorded this now twice. I'm sorry to all the listeners that you don't get the Derek Burns commentary. Tried to sprinkle in as much as we could there. Entirely my fault. I will try to change my best with a Necton mentality at a pre-Fontaine pace. My bad.
You're human.
Yeah, I'm human. Okay. Anything else you want to part? Otherwise, we'll probably just call this thing a wrap. I know we talked about Big Ten games, but at this point, I can't stomach the thought of going through them again.
I love recording for an hour and then having to redo it. So we'll be better on Wednesday. We promise.
We promise. Yeah, I like how you're being nice to me. This is entirely my fault. Again, thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.